Good afternoon, 360 Coaching listeners and followers. I am out here in sunny Reno, Nevada now. So this is John Christmas IV coming at you with 360 Coaching. Today we get to have Tim Morris on our show. We are always excited to get any coach on here. So you know how 360 Coaching goes and finds. We wanted to make it a very unique background. We want to make it any type of coach, anywhere, anytime. So this is our chance to really get to know Tim. Tim's going to take it away and tell you all about himself because I don't want to be talking the whole time. So Tim, go ahead and tell the listeners about yourself.
Well, Tim Morris. I'm originally from Atlanta, Georgia. Was born in Houston, but I call Atlanta home. I grew up in East Point, suburb of Atlanta. Played my college high school ball at Whitfield Academy with Coach Tyrone Johnson. Got recruited to go to Stanford, played ball there. Was there for 3 years. Played for Mike Montgomery and Trent Johnson. I decided to transfer after my junior year. Played and went to University of Washington up in Seattle. So I sat out a year, then played my senior year there. After I graduated, I actually went back to Stanford to graduate, but I played my senior year at Washington. After graduating, I signed with a team in Germany, played for FC Bayern in Munich, Germany. Played there for a season, got hurt, had a little degenerative hip issue. So had to quit playing ball and decided to get into coaching. I was trying to figure out exactly what I wanted to do. When I was getting recruited out of high school, Coach Anthony Grant, he was at Florida at the time. He was associate head coach there. Well, when I came back, I was trying to decide what I wanted to do. Do I want to coach? Do I want to get into business? And my high school coach, he'd been telling me since, as Coach Johnson, he'd been telling me since I was playing for him that I should coach. That's because of the way I approached the game, my work ethic, all of that stuff. So he said, just give it a shot. Call Coach Grant. He had just gotten a job. He left VCU to go to Alabama. And so I called him, went down to Tuscaloosa, drove 3.5 hours to visit with him. And he said, well, look, if you want to coach, get into grad school, be a GA for me. And I decided to apply to school, was a GA for him, and the rest was history. Was there for 2 years, a year first. Then I took a job at Kennesaw State University in Atlanta and was an assistant there. Was there for a year and then went back to Alabama. Just as a student, I got a fellowship position as a PhD fellow in the Department of Kinesiology, studying exercise physiology. So I did that for a year, but then I decided to get back with basketball. So I was working on my PhD while being a grad assistant again for 2 years with the team in Alabama. And then after that second year, I moved out to Reno, and I'm working with Coach Eric Musselman now as the director of player development. So that's the basketball side. There's other stuff, but that's the skin and bones of it.
Well, it's good, and that's the main thing I like hearing from is the journey, because journey is so important to business, sports, life, where you go. You know, myself, I love basketball from the day I've ever started playing it and coaching it and doing numerous other things with it, and now I get the unique opportunity to watch it, which I do enjoy, and playing it recreationally is more fun than I've ever had, because when you don't care so much about how you're playing and you still get to win, it's fun. But I always like asking the difference. So as an athlete for so long and then switching to coaching, what is the, I guess you could call, the key differences that you see now as being different from those two roles?
Well, as an athlete, you just get the visceral experience of competing, like the sweating, the intensity, the physicality. All of those things are what I miss the most about it, because I've talked to people about how there's few things in life that can replace full competition, where you can just totally be yourself, where there's no decorum, you don't have to be polite, you can just go out there and really try to beat somebody. And that's the thrill of I think most athletics, where that, but that's also the similarity between coaching and being an athlete. You can still compete. And so that's the similarity. The differences, I'll say, are it's not as physical, like I said. But and then you have to think about it from a big picture. You're not just thinking about yourself. Now, basketball is a team sport, so you're still, as a player, thinking about the team, but you, in order to be great, you still have to focus on yourself some. Now, as a coach, you're having to think about, let me see all these little pieces and how do they fit best together to make the best unit. So there's nuances to all of that. We could talk for hours about how to best maximize 5 individuals or even 13 individuals or 15 individuals in college coaching. But the biggest difference is perspective. There's a little bit more we as a coach, a lot more we as a coach. compared to the individual focus of being an athlete. Now, as a coach, you still want to have, like, I still have goals to, how do I become a better coach? How do I reach this kid better? How do I relate to guys? How do I communicate this point? How do I help him understand? Because people learn in different ways. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to study physiology and exercise science and exercise psychology, because people learn in different ways. You need to approach them in different ways. You need to, there's just so many different details that you have to look at to reach the person, to make them their best self. So it's more of a selfless journey being a coach, as opposed to being more focused on yourself as a player.
And you talk a lot about, I like to say there's a lot more preparation in coaching than really before. Whereas you prepare as a player now, you've got to research all the players, the other offenses, the defenses, the greatest players certainly do that. But the coaches have a whole new level because you guys have to think bigger picture. Mm-hmm. So when you guys think bigger picture, go a little bit into that, because for me it means something very different sometimes, whether it be business or sports. But how do you think big picture?
Well, I mean, that's one of the beauties of my journey. I've played at every level. So obviously not the NBA, but I played at the professional level. I played at high level D1. I played in high school. And then from a coaching perspective, I've started kind of from the bottom as a GA, where you can see the ins and outs of how a program is run. So that's one of the beauties of two of the coaches I've worked under, Anthony Grant and Eric Musselman. Their preparation and attention to detail was second to none. I guess I'll have to break it into two or three areas. So there's the skill development side, and there's a lot of detail in that, because that's a detail-oriented, fully encompassing quest in itself. Then there's the preparing for competition on top of that. So that's another journey that you have to get into. Then there's statistics, then there's recruiting. So you have to prepare, just like you're a player, for all of those. So player development. You're on the court, you want to create a culture where guys are getting in the gym all the time, where they're working on all their deficiencies, and then you need to have people who know how to recognize those deficiencies, and that can include watching film, that can include people who've played, that can include just having a feel for what a player needs. So, and then after you've recognized that stuff, getting them to understand how to break it down, how to show them the little pieces of, all right, what's this footwork, what's this mechanics, what's this what are the biomechanics of how they work, what's the best way to teach their feel if they need to be a better shooter. How do you get them to be a better ball handler? So they're drills that you have to learn, that you learn through playing, you learn through coaching other people, you learn through going to conferences, all of that stuff. So there's a journey in learning all of that stuff. Now when it comes to preparing for other teams, you have to break down a whole coach's philosophy and style of play. And you have to have your own philosophy of how you want to play. But the preparation in that world is even more, because you have to watch hours of film. You have to break that film down to see, say a team presses and plays zone and plays half court man. You need to know how to attack that on each level of playing. So I could go on and on about that, but then you get to recruiting, and that's a huge part, because you can't compete without having great talent. Like, that's the bottom line. It doesn't matter how much preparation you do. If you don't have great talent as a coach that you're putting on the floor, you can't compete. So you need to scour the country, scour the world, really, because the international side of things has grown. The national game is just as competitive as America now. But here in the States, you have to, through having a great staff who's diligently looking at every player around the country. So there are three different things that you kind of have to look at, but that type of preparation takes a lot.
And that's one thing that I tell everybody, is preparation is really what matters the most. Mm-hmm. When I come to, whether it comes to health, which is what I work a lot of, is that you need to prepare yourself. You need to make sure you cook, you clean, you take care of yourself, and then you plan in your workouts, you plan and you plan and you plan. Now, you mentioned the great word. I always like philosophy. Mm-hmm. As a coach, as a person, anything, there needs to be an underlying philosophy. I've read a lot of Pete Carroll's stuff, and mm-hmm. he really likes 25 words or less. Now, you don't have to limit to 25 words, right. But what is your philosophy as a coach, whether it's, you know, the University of Nevada, Reno, and then your own?
Yeah, I guess I'll start with myself. My philosophy, my personal philosophy, is that the game of basketball is supposed to be fun. And when you start with that premise, you play it because it's fun, then you play it because you love it. When you find people who love the game, they'll do anything, they'd be great at it. So initially, you want to find people who, from players all the way up to the coaches, who love the game, because then you're going to get the most out of yourself. So, like, I know a lot of people who have similar backgrounds to me might not see sports as an end-all, be-all, but when it's something you love, it's something that's great. So I want to be able to do something that's true to myself, and when you're true to yourself, you can maximize everything. So I guess I start with that, but my philosophy as a coach is I want to reach people. I want to reach people, I want to help them grow, but I also want to help them be the best player that they can be. Have an environment of fun, have an environment of intensity, and have an environment of competition. So my philosophy is based in competing as hard as you can, trying to win, trying to beat everybody. Like, and that drives everything else. So you want to, like, some people want to practice being super disciplined. Other people want to practice knowing a whole lot of sets, or no, like, my philosophy, I think, yeah, you need all of those things, but you practice competing and teaching people to be great competitors. And I think that's one thing, working with Coach Musselman now, he's one of the fieriest competitors I've ever met. So it's a, I understand him in that sense. So the goal is to win, and you want to win at everything, win at all the details. And so be the best in every drill you do. Come with great energy every day. And that's him coaching our coaches, me, myself included, bringing great energy, having everybody flying around, taking ownership of everything that you do, any idea that you're given, and taking it to the 10th degree. Even bringing more things to the table. He talks about, I want a staff that makes me better as a coach. And he's been an NBA head coach. He's been an NBA assistant coach. He's coached in developmental league. So he's this experienced, but he's still looking to grow. So having a culture of growth is always something that's great. And from a player standpoint, you just want the guys to be thirsty. We have an open door policy. We'll be here till 10 at night if players want to voluntarily come watch film with us. He's created a staff where you had GAs and managers who are always on call. It's the same way Alabama when I was there too. You're always on call, and you wanted the players to call you, and to create an environment where guys are always working to get better. Because when there's initiative, that's hard to beat. When you have 26, 27 people who are all generating their own initiative and wanting to be their best selves, you have a hell of a program. So
I always like to say it's called outsourcing your talent, because then even as a coach, the players can coach themselves. It makes a great environment to be in. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, I've been part of teams that were like that, where the coaches relied on us a lot to help each other, and that was an amazing ability. Now, I only played up to the high school level, so I didn't know that level, but I've worked with the professionals, and man, it's really a great thing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and you marked on a lot of the key points on those things. I always like asking people, especially coaches, what is your self-improvement plan, whether it is with the coaching staff here or your own personal development plan? What is it that you do each day, each week, or even during the year? Do you plan stuff in? You know, I always like asking that.
Yeah, I think we use the word here, scour. Scouring the internet, scouring different articles and journals, and just people who are sharing their thoughts, trying to understand different perspectives. So the media and what different articles, different interviews are good places to see other coaches' perspectives around the country, because you have beat writers everywhere. So for me, I think our staff does some of this too, is just reading all the time. You wake up, you read an article, like Twitter's a great resource for this, because you just have to follow the right people. Finding beat writers are all around your conference, all around the country, from respected people you know and don't know. And then reading the different articles and different philosophies that they have. I took it kind of a step further. Most basketball coaches and players don't try to get a PhD, but I feel like our profession is rooted in physiology, because it helps in your decisions to make when you're making decisions about how long do we practice, how intense do we practice, how does this guy move, how do I work the different energy systems. So that's the reason why I wanted to take that route, as opposed to necessarily jumping straight into being an assistant coach, because studying the body, it's the base of what we do. So I think, given that I have a good understanding of that, I try to continue to read. I haven't, I'm still in the process of finishing. I'm 3 years into it. But just that that background and having that base is, I think, great and helps you grow more as a coach.
Is there anything in particular, because I always like asking what books you have read, or maybe you guys issue to players or your staff even, like must reads that your coaches push or you push, or just some of those, you know, articles or books that you really push?
I think it's like for players, I think it's best when it comes from people they can relate to. So Mus is great with this. He's always pulling quotes and articles, like Draymond Green talking about how he likes to compete. And especially though the Warriors are, they're easy to, because they're successful. They're easy to relate to because they're so successful and they're so team oriented. Like they don't have, they have multiple stars, but they share. They're one of the most unselfish teams I've ever been around. So different quotes about how competitive they are. Different quotes from like coach. I remember this one. What's his name? Kevin Garnett, Doc Rivers, when they were in Boston. Doc Rivers said, "Kevin, you're sitting. You're not practicing today." And he wouldn't sit because he felt like he was as a leader on the team, he wouldn't be as respected if he sit. So Doc wasn't gonna let him practice. So he went on the side and Leon Poe was his backup. And every loose ball, every rebound, every sprint up and down the court, he would mime his movements and get his practice in. Now that's kind of extreme, but it shows you the principle of what work is like. And so we like that kind of, that article was one that we shared with our players. Kobe Bryant, he has a million stories. I played with I played against Will Conroy, but when I was at Washington, Will would be around playing pickup all the time, and I think he got a call up to the Lakers, and he told me once, and he was talking to some of our guys when I was there, how Kobe would always be getting work in. He'd call you, "You want to get some work in?" He was at his door at 4 a.m. "Let's go get this work." Like different stories like that, I think, are the ones where they can be most impactful as a coach. Because, yeah, reading books and stories and are good, but when you can tell stories and that somebody can relate to from their peers or somebody they look up to, I think those can be more impactful. So I'll read a lot, trying to find those stories that can relate, that you can help players relate to.
And it's interesting because I got in kind of a downward spiral for a while because I read more, but I acted less. Mm-hmm. So now that I do the opposite, I act more, I'll still read, but I try to find the real life people that have lived what I'm trying to do.
Right.
And it makes it a lot easier. And when I was a player, I'd always read about whether it be Michael Jordan or any of the greats that I got to grow up with and mm-hmm. watch. It was always unbelievable the amount of stories they come from. But, you know, that's always a helpful thing. Now, transitioning, I like to say, to a little bit of a different thing. So I know that you have had an amount of education that most coaches do not have and has exposed you. What has that education gained you into coaching? Because a lot of it is exercise phys, which was my background. How has that really benefited you as a coach, especially being that this player development coach, it's relatively not a new position, but it's certainly one that is now, it is all around every professional sport and is now really breaking into college, even to high schools now. So
Yeah. How
has that really benefited you in being a greater coach?
Well, I guess in order to really answer that question, I have to start with how I grew up in my family background. My dad, he played college football at Tulane. Instead of trying to go play pro ball, he went to grad school, went to law school, then ended up being a corporate banker, and then got a master's and quit being a corporate banker and went to get a master's and PhD in political science and world economy. So for him, education was everything. We even had tension at times because, like, I love to learn. I'm his son, but athletics and basketball is my number one. So I'm wired to want to learn, and I see the value of having a great knowledge base. But that's why I think that education, understanding physiology, which I mentioned earlier, and understanding how to really live well and really understand life and the essence of whatever your craft is. And in order to fully understand your craft, I think you need to get to the root of it. For our sport, it's physiology, it's competition, it's psychology, it's camaraderie, it's brotherhood, it's all of those pieces make up basketball. So for me, I want to understand it all, and I want to understand it as well as an expert. I know that's a lofty goal, but physiology, I want to learn that great well. I want to learn how to be a great teacher. I want to learn how to be a great leader. There was a movie, what is it? Dawn of Planet of the Apes. I don't know if you've seen it, and it's probably the nerd in me coming out, but I love that movie. And Caesar, the lead ape, he was he showed some leadership qualities when everybody was arguing. They were trying to figure out if they wanted to, what they should do after the humans found their hideout. Some people wanted to show a force. Some people wanted to invade. Well, he heard all of these. He was quiet the whole time as there was all this emotion, and in the midst of chaos, he's calm. Then he interrupted and said, "I'll give you an answer in the morning." When I watched that, I said, I'm taking notes. I got to learn from that. That's something that great leaders can do. They can be calm in the midst of pressure and then still be thinking well. And little things like that, that's kind of a microcosm of how I want to approach being a coach. I always want to be learning. I want to learn every piece of it. I don't want to miss something. I don't want to be 10 years down the road and say, "Oh, I didn't know that was a part of coaching." So I didn't give myself a chance to learn it. So I think, like I said, physiology, psychology, leadership, all those things are strategy, skill development, all those things I want to be well versed in.
It's funny you mentioned that movie, because I do love that movie as well. And mm-hmm. It is funny how much you see the dichotomy kind of between his leadership and how leaders should be. Mm-hmm. And I always like to say to myself, what I've gotten better with is, especially reading an emotional intelligence book, is that I really have to count to 10 before I make decisions. I do need to sleep on things. It has been a very difficult part of growing up, I like to say, but man, even tougher when you start dealing with leadership, because emotions do deal in everything we do, and right. It's hard to take a step back. So it's great you mentioned that. And that's one of the great things about being a coach. You get to see things that just do not get to be seen as a player. And I think that's really unique. But I like going into it because you have some international experience. And I've encouraged so many players, athletes, even students, to go get some international experience. How did playing in Germany really differ, not only from your experiences in the U.S., but mm-hmm. how did everything else differ? You know, your lifestyle, your education out there, you know, how did that differ?
Right. It's a lot different. I was lucky. Munich is an international city. 60 to 70% of the people in Europe spoke in Munich spoke English. So I like to say there's a joke that a lot of people talk about. What do you call somebody who speaks three languages? Trilingual. What do you call somebody who speaks two languages? Bilingual. What do you call somebody who speaks one language? American. And the Germans love to tell that joke. So I guess there was, with that being said, there was still a culture shock. You're eating different foods. People are coming from a different perspective in life. You're on your own completely, and especially at that age, I think I was 23. You're a professional, like where you're responsible for producing, and it's not about learning anymore. A lot of college, I know college has been turned into a business as well, but there's still a growth aspect to playing in college. Well, there if you're not on time, you're fined. If you're late, that's a problem. So if you don't produce, you can get cut. If you don't behave the right way, there's no cushion. So doing that all the while being in a different country where you're having to learn different culture differences, where you're having to navigate ordering food or doing that on your own. Like that's part of why in the academy, like at different universities, they encourage people to go study abroad. As an athlete, you don't really get that opportunity that often. Some teams do the foreign tour for 10 days, and I mean, that's great. But being over there for a year, 2 years, living in that environment, seeing different things is a change.
Because for me, I always like the idea of you got to be comfortable being uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of players who I have witnessed gone, they wanted to go the NBA route, but then they went the international route, which is, to me, a greater gift, because you get to go to places that you just would not get to go to. Right. You get to be a part of a culture that fully embraces you as the athlete, and you are their athlete, and it's very different. And I don't know how that translates, because I know you've had experience probably with NBA players and NBA coaches and all these things. How is that difference? Because we have seen some great things about the NBA, some not so great things about the NBA, but where do you see the differences between the international NBA game just in how it develops players?
Well, I know in some countries like China, NBA basketball and basketball is number one sport. In Europe, where I was in Germany, basketball was two or three, well, probably three. Soccer, football is one. Handball in Germany was really popular, and then basketball. So being a second or third tier sport compared to being a number one sport is a big difference. I think, yeah, that's one of the huge differences to it. And back to the other question about the difference between living overseas and how that changes you. You see the history. Like, the United States is a young country, 300 years old. I mean, you're going through Munich and Frankfurt and Bamberg. And like, when I was at Washington, we took a tour to Greece. You're seeing all this history, and being exposed to that is really eye-opening. It gives you perspective that, oh, they're different. It seems so different. I've never been in that part of the world, but they've just maybe created a different way to do the same things. We're all on this same search, the same journey. So I think it's a great experience for anybody to do.
And I always like going that. I'm hoping to do more soon enough to really get out to Europe, and I want to do multiple weeks out there, because I just think 1 or 10 days or 2 weeks just probably isn't going to do it.
Right.
So if I could spend a couple months, that's my dream. I really want to get out to Germany and Norway and other places that force me to grow a lot more. So, you know, kind of going into unique transitions, and I know this is probably goes along to coaching philosophy and all that stuff, but how do you do what you do? Because it's different when some people say, you know, what they do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why and how did you choose coaching? Like, why did you really choose it, though? Deep down, you could have done many things with your education background. You could have done great things anywhere. But why coaching, though?
To be totally honest, I love the game. I don't want to leave the game. Being around it, watching guys compete, being a part of helping a guy to get better to compete at the highest level. Personally, my growth as a basketball player, I didn't reach my potential because of injury one, and just not knowing enough at the right times. Like, when I really started figuring out how to work in the right ways and understanding the full dynamics of the game, I started having injuries. So I want to help people not experience that and help people reach their best selves. So when you're figuring out something on your own, it's you can do it. Like, I like to think willpower is great, and I have a high willpower. But when you have a teacher who's been there before, that's the basis of respect your elders. They've been there before, they've lived. I want to be an elder for all of the players I end up coming across. So I want to help people grow. I want to teach these guys. But on the other side of that, I love competition. I talk about it sometimes where you can't get the highs and lows in anything else but competition, in competition in sport. Like, yeah, there's competition in business, there's competition in other things, but in sports, the highs are high and the lows are low, and the pressure is great too. I love the pressure to have to produce all the time. So all of that, the combination of all of that, like, I wouldn't be content in anything else where I'm forced to work all the time. We work ridiculous hours, most people would say, but I would feel unsatisfied otherwise. So the combination of all those things, the pressure, the competition, the love of the game, the camaraderie, the teaching, the brotherhood, it's a combination of all of that that I just love it. I love being around it.
I always like mentioning this because I've instilled this to many people, but on average, per week, how many hours do you work? Let's say during the season.
I usually get in around 8 every day. I'll leave probably 6:30 on average. Sometimes it's that's days before the game. Game day, I get in at the same time, but you're leaving at 10:30, 11, depending on the time of the game. And that's every day. Even on off days for the guys, we're still here preparing, promoting the team, doing, making sure the guys are have all their classwork done. They're recruiting. There's film preparation. There's just things always always things to be done. So what is that? 14 hours a day on average, maybe 12 hours a day on average, 7 days a week during the season. Yeah.
Yeah. So, because I always make that joke to people that come across when I used to work in professional sports and all this other stuff, but they like to think that their 40-hour work week is there. I'm like, I remember my first part-time job too. Like, yeah. And I was not, when I was an intern, I was working 60, 70-hour weeks, and I don't even get paid for it. Yeah. So that was tough, and I'm like, man.
And the only way to fuel that is love. If you don't have a passion, if you don't have a love and passion for it, you can't do it. So you can't just get through this. You have to attack it with vigor, and you have to just, otherwise, as everybody else has their own little army. All these other schools are and programs are trying to find their competitive advantage, and I think in vigor and intensity and creativity and just work, you can't just work through it. You have to have that with this sense of energy and excitement, and to really be successful.
Well, and I just think if you don't love it, you'll burn out so quick. Yeah. And those 60, 70-hour weeks, you'll look back and be like, why did I do them? I learned more than I ever could have. Yeah. You do it because you love it, and in the end, yeah, you'll burn out if you don't, and that just means probably need to find something else that you can put 60, 70 hours into. Right. Go there the next week, attack it the same way.
Yeah.
And you mentioned the word attack a lot, and I know a lot of people bring it back to the word. A lot of people love what they do and they're passionate about what they do, but I came from a position where I wasn't necessarily very happy with how people were dealing with health. I wasn't necessarily happy with every coach I ever had.
Mm-hmm.
So it came from a position of me where I got kind of pissed off and really came at it. And you come at it from a position more of, I love the game, mm-hmm. and I love those things. And that's for me, all the listeners out there, they know kind of my story, but that's why I love doing these things, because it's mm-hmm. really fun. But getting onto some personal stuff, Tim, I don't always want to talk about this, but what are your hobbies when you're not here the crazy hours?
Yeah.
What are you doing in either in the community or with your family, or what is it that you do outside of here?
Well, I just got married in August, so Morgan and I, we hang out all the time. So when I'm not here, especially during the season, I'm hanging out with her. I love golf. It's part of my personality. I can't play basketball at the highest level anymore, so I want to be a scratch golfer, not too far from it. But so that's, though I love playing golf, that's probably one of my biggest hobbies. And Morgan and I are kind of foodies, so we'll go try different restaurants and like different experiences, and we love to travel. So that's more off-season stuff. But yeah, during the season, it's basketball and hanging out with my wife.
Yeah. Now, I always like asking this because, too, you know, have you gotten your wife to try golf? And if so, how do I get my fiance to do it?
Hey, get her some wine. Tell her to come
okay.
out.
Okay, all right, that she'll go
drive
for.
Drive the car, drink some wine, hang out. It's pretty. That's the other side of it, too. It's like hanging out. You get to spend some quality time. So.
Yeah, because I've tried the route of she has driven the cart, and she's almost crashed it once, which was really a great story. And I'm trying to get her into it, but maybe I just need to get away from it, because I love the game, too.
Yeah.
And it is not something where I've been competitive, but I really want to be.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, once I go back to Southern California, get my clubs and come back, I'm really going to have to it. But, you know, wrapping this whole thing up, I always like asking for the aspiring coaches out there who especially, you know, have played at any level and they want to be coaches. What is something that you like telling them that if they're going on that journey, what's something you like them to think about?
Well, I've talked to a few people at different ages, because you transition from being a player to not being a player. At like, for me, it was at 26. One of my good friends, Devin Davis, who I worked with last year, he did it at 38. So it's hard to let go of being a competitor. I've had other young coaches come into it, but you're a tool for helping players get better once you become a coach. Like as a GA or as a manager or as a practice player, you're their sparring partner. Yeah, and Devin and I would have arguments about that. Yeah, you need to show them how to compete and how to be fighters. But at the end of the day, you can't let yourself get so worked up and so wrapped into the competition, because you're still their teacher. So they're different. I think that dynamic, navigating that transition is remembering that you're here to help. You're here to make them their best selves. And that's just my philosophy. I think that's one of the biggest parts to helping people grow.
Now I'm going to ask this because I did want to wrap this up, but I have one big thing I always like asking. I've always been a big fan of obviously seeing like guys like Magic Johnson, Michael Jordan, but transitioning them to coaches, I've always had that little ongoing argument with people. Can those greatest players really be the greatest coaches? You know, I would love to know your take on it because in my opinion, it always is no.
Yeah.
But some have done it, but it's a very small percentage.
I think, yeah, you're right. It's a small percentage, but I think it depends on your makeup. Kobe seems to have the mind for it. I don't know if he has the temperament and the patience for it. Jordan's track record speaks for itself. But you look at Larry Bird and John Elway, and Steve Kerr wasn't great, but he was good. I think it's all based on how you see the game, how you break things down. And that really dictates your ability to be a coach. You can't think like a player being a coach, because that transition, people are so competitive, and that's what made them great. Their huge competitive nature is what made them great, and it's hard to let go of that for some people. And some people can remove themselves from it and really be psychologists, and really look into somebody and see, how do I reach him best? How do I reach this team? How do I get together, get them to be one? Other people just get mad at you for, how do you not do that? Why don't you fight harder? And I don't know. Like I said, I think it's you have to look at it on an individual basis. And I think some of the greats have had the ability to do that, but others really just can't.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I came from, is that I had a coach who was a very great player in high school. He couldn't understand how we couldn't do certain things. Right. And he just, like, coach, we weren't you. And as much as we may want to be, it's tough, you know, and we got the wrath of that. But I always like asking that question because it's just, It's so interesting in sports these days how, one, you're going to be around the game for sure, but being such a great player, it's hard to separate that mindset.
Right.
And it's the same thing in either business or anything. When you're that good at that level for so long, how can you separate from it? It might be hard, but I believe it's doable, as always. But I always like asking, any other words you'd like to speak to the listeners and coaches out there? You know, feel free to have at it. But, I mean, anything else you want to talk to us about or anything?
No, I guess one of the things is I love health. My life is that. I think you live your best life and you can be your best self and live well. I think some ancient philosophers talk about living well through, and this is one of those ways to do it, by learning physiology and being active and competing. I think for me, and athletes, we take it to another level, but I think it's a part of everything. I think it's a part of being a full person. And I think as a coach and coaching in a university, you're helping people become full people in its perfect sense. Now, it's been perverted a little bit in the NCAA because of how much money is involved. But in its purest sense, the college environment is a great environment. You're able to learn. You're able to just improve every part of who you are, intellectually, physically, emotionally, socially. You're in that environment, and the people around you, that's what they're tasked to do. So I really like the college environment. I think it's a great thing in its best self.
I agree. I went through a lot of schooling, and in the end, I always loved it because it's probably one of the greatest times where I got to learn all those things you talk about. But thank you so much, Tim, again, for coming on. So listeners and followers out there, we're going to have more great coaches like Tim, and hopefully in about 6 months, I'm always going to call him back and see if he'll do another interview and see if we can learn even more. So all the followers out there, keep on listening in, keep on writing in. But this is John Christmas IV with 360 Coaching. Thanks, guys, and we'll talk to you soon.